and here we've got temperatures of 19 to 20 degrees. Our final stop is on to northern Scotland, where with low pressure close by, Saturday will be quite breezy and cloudy. We'll see some patchy rain during the morning, but it should start to clear come the afternoon, so turning a little bit drier, and again we'll get temperatures around 16 to 17. That's the forecast.
Nina, thanks very much. And we'll have the shipping forecast, the full shipping bulletin, in around 15 minutes' time. But now on BBC Radio 4, the final extract from our Book of the Week, The Pink Sari Revolution by Amana Fontanella Khan. The women's rights activist Sampat Pal and her gang have not been put off by threats or by the fact that rape victims in India rarely get justice. Now they plan to take to the streets to demand the release of the young girl, Sheelu, whose case has become quite a cause célèbre in the national press. Meera Sayal is the reader.
There are many ways in which corrupt officials might attempt to crush the spirit of a young woman accusing a powerful politician of rape. When a woman in India claims she has been raped, it's very common for her to be subjected to a demeaning, unscientific physical exam. If a woman has been found to be sexually active prior to the alleged rape, her character is questioned publicly in the courts. Sheelu claims that when two female doctors came to the jail to conduct a medical exam, they pressured her about dropping her accusations of rape against the legislator. "Sheelu, calm down," they said. "He will be put in jail for nothing." They tried to force her to sign an empty piece of paper, but she adamantly refused. The doctors got angry then and conducted the internal exam without gloves. If Sheelu had been raped, then the invasive nature of this would have caused her to relive the trauma. But refusing was not an option. She would be labelled uncooperative in court. She was then subjected to 5 hours of interrogation by Shukla, the sub-inspector, and another officer. They too allegedly attempted to pressure her into signing a blank piece of paper and tried to bribe her with 600,000 rupees, which is over $10,000. "You'll take this money and change your statement. You will get justice," they told her. "How? All I seek is for Dwivedi to be punished." Just a few days later, on January 1, 2011, the police publicly acknowledged for the first time that Sheelu was accusing the legislator Dwivedi of rape. The headline on the front page of the Hindustan was succinct: "Legislator named in Sheelu rape case." The same article reported on the results of Sheelu's medical exam. The key finding was that Sheelu was a habitual sex addict. The Hindustan suggested that the doctors had devised this report to help the legislator. On the following day, January the 2nd, Dwivedi was suspended from the legislature whilst investigations were ongoing. He told journalists at a press conference in Bandar that the charges were politically motivated. He added that he was impotent, and his wife Asha gave a statement echoing this defence. Meanwhile, Sheelu's naive little brother, Santu, arranged for some assistance with bail through a politician he approached by the name of Vishambar Nishad. Nishad, a political opponent of Dwivedi, readily agreed, saying he would do more than pay the bond. He would also arrange to get the family rehoused in a coveted place in a government housing project. On January the 4th, Sheelu appeared in court and declared that she wanted to accept the bail her brother had arranged if the court decided to grant it. Sampath and one of her pink gang lawyers were at court that day, expecting that their bail offer would be accepted. Now Sampath looked like a fool, a busybody Samaritan whose help was not needed. But she was more irritated by Nishad's opportunism. He had a criminal sheet a mile long, and there were numerous charges pending against him. She did not believe that he had Sheelu's best interests at heart. Nishad gave a press conference outside the court after the hearing. Sampath shouted at him from the crowd.
"One politician has already raped her. Now you want to use her like a puppet? We're not going to let that happen. Don't think you can buy Sheelu with your money."
Nishad wrapped up his conference and left abruptly, and the media focus turned to Sampath.
Are you disappointed?
I don't care whose bail she takes,
Sampath replied in her short fuse way.
I don't need her to pat me on the back when she comes out, you know. Unlike others, I'm not doing this to gain anything. All I want is for her to be released.
The Pink Gang gathered for the protest, coming en masse to Bandar from all over the state by train. In the cramped carriages, the district commanders started warming up their vocal cords for a long day of shouting ahead. They led their members in a set of call and response chants.
Long live the Pink Gang! Down with Dwivedi! Down! Down!
When all the gang members streamed off the train doors looked like open wounds, bleeding bright pink. Many of the women in pink saris also carried sticks, which they had painted the same pink. They marched through the streets, Sampath at the helm. It was raining. The ground was muddy, and several women slipped and fell, dirtying their saris. But as one woman shrugged,
I'm not half as muddy as Dwivedi's conscience, eh?
They approached the jail where Shilu was being held. There were already several journalists present. The Pink Gang stopped at the gates leading toward the jail, which were protected by two guards bearing arms. The jailer was sent out to deal with her. Sampath handed him a printed copy of the gang's demands. The legislator should be investigated. Shilu's case should be squashed. She should be freed immediately and given 1,000,000 rupees as compensation. The jailer took this without comment. Their next step would be a tu-tu rally, the onomatopoeic name for a protest involving spitting.
The police are useless, huh? They would not listen. If we resort to violence, we will be in trouble. So I decided to embarrass them. We announced we would not say anything, but we would just spit on their walls, Sampath relates with her crackling laugh.
Soon after the women began their spitting protest, the Deputy Inspector General of the police insisted that the women come inside to settle things. Sampath claims that the inspector admitted that injustice was done with Shilu, but said that he could not take a stand against rogue politicians. Sampath was not impressed.
Are you serving the law or the government?
January the 15th, 2011 should have been the best day of the year for Mayawati, the chief minister of Uttar Pradesh. It was her 55th birthday, and befitting this politician who had built statues in the capital glorifying herself, she had, in the interest of the people, declared the day to be Human Welfare Day, to be celebrated with gusto and the unveiling of 600 new government projects. However, a shadow was being cast over all this fanfare. The results of the preliminary inquiry into Shilu's allegations had now been published, and after recording the statements of over a dozen people, the investigators concluded that Dwivedi had indeed raped Shilu and framed her on a false theft charge. The court ordered his arrest. As he was escorted to the station, the legislator smiled and calmly told reporters that he would take his revenge on the ones who got him stuck in this mess. The Allahabad High Court made a surprise announcement in the midst of the elaborate birthday celebrations. They were ordering the immediate release of Shilu, who was still imprisoned despite the bail applications made on her behalf and the arrest of Dwivedi. Mayawati issued a quick statement saying, no one will be allowed to take the law into his own hands under our government. On the day of Shilu's release, around 50 Pink Gang women marched toward the yard in front of the jail, which was slowly filling up with people. Opportunistic political agitators poured in, with Vishamba Nishad's group describing Shilu's release as its own victory. Nishad made a speech to the crowds, lambasting the chief minister Mayawati for celebrating her birthday and eating cake while poor Shilu has spent a month in jail. This made Sampath's blood boil, and she vowed not to let the girl be exploited when she came out. Hours passed, and there was still no sign of Shilu. It was cold out, and the sky was darkening. Achay Lal arrived with his son, Santu. He was let through the prison gates and told to wait outside until Shilu decided if she wanted to go home with her father. Inside the jail, preparations were being made for Shilu's release. Despite all her differences with her father, she decided that for the time being, she would return home with him. The presiding officer pressed a stamp into an ink pad, and then, asking for Shilu's arm, he stamped her flesh, once on her palm and a second time on her inner arms, with the sign of freedom.
"Show this to the man at the gate," he explained. "Then you are free."
When she finally left the jail, it was 11 o'clock at night, but throngs of people were there waiting for her release. Ache didn't interact with his daughter at all during her release. Rather, his son Santu, carrying a plastic bag with clothes for her, stood at his sister's side. Someone garlanded Shilu with marigolds, and then she walked forward. She flashed a dazzling, victorious smile at her supporters and the cameras before the shouting crowd swallowed her up and she panicked, gripping her brother's arm. Then she, her father and her brother were loaded into a police van and driven home to their village. 2 days later, Sampath went to visit Shilu there. She carried with her a pink sari, neatly folded in a bag. When she arrived at the village, she found the girl surrounded by media and a group of policemen who'd been assigned to protect her and the family at all hours, given that Dwivedi had so publicly sworn revenge. Shilu was excited to see Sampath.
"Didi," she cried out, "sister."
The two women talked about Shilu's health and what her hopes were for the future. Then she gave the girl some advice.
"Political parties are taking advantage of you. Don't let anyone build capital out of your misfortune. Don't let yourself be used."
Shilu nodded. Sampath then opened her bag and gave her the sari.
"This is the uniform of our pink gang. With us, you will get justice for yourself, and you will help other women to get justice too. We are here when you are ready."
8 months after Shilu's release, Sampath got an offer from the top of the Indian National Congress Party. Rahul Gandhi himself asked Sampath if she would run for a seat in the assembly next year as the Congress candidate. "You are a strong woman. We want you to run for elections." Sampath had conflicting emotions running through her, excitement mixed with fear.
"I don't want to get into all this. I don't want to be their slave," she thought.
She had never taken orders from anyone before, and she worried about being compromised by the world of politics. But she felt compelled to enter the race.
"Unless good people get into politics, they will just sell off the country."
She thought about how it had taken her a long time to get where she was today, and about all she had achieved. Leaving her mother-in-law's house, then founding an organization known throughout the country for fighting injustice, all without any education. The Pink Gang had helped women to participate in public life, made them confident, and taught them that they too could have power and a voice. She decided to run. She knew that, like all parties, the Congress Party had its fair share of corruption, but she had faith in her own integrity.
"If anybody is doing a wrong thing in Congress, I won't let them get away with it. I will scold them and ask, why are you doing this?"
On the day the votes were counted, Sampath learned that she had lost to a candidate from the BSP, Dwivedi's party. She had come fourth out of 22 candidates. She cried that night on her terrace.
"A good person will never win here," she lamented, shaking her head.
Perhaps that was one reason why some supporters of the Pink Gang felt relief that Sampath had not won. She would be able to dedicate herself to holding elected officials accountable. The challenge criminal politicians pose is a national problem in India. There is no doubt that a strong Pink Gang is needed. Now more than ever.
Meera Sayal was reading from The Pink Sari Revolution by Amana Fontanella Khan. The book's abridged by Eileen Horn, produced by Clive Brill, and it's a Pacificus production for BBC Radio 4. For our next book of the week, the author Philip Hoare celebrates a lifetime's association with the sea. He walks by the sea, dives into the sea, and is wholly inspired by the sea. I expect he'll be paying attention for the next 15 minutes. And now the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015 on Saturday the 3rd of August. There are warnings of gales in Rockall, Malin, Hebrides, Bailey and southeast Iceland. The general synopsis at 1800, low, Bailey 987, expected Faroes 988 by 1800 Saturday, low, Holland 1006, losing its identity by same time. New low expected 90 miles west of Seoul, 1009 by that time. The area forecasts for the next 24 hours, Viking, north Utsira, south Utsira, southerly or southeasterly, veering southwesterly for a time, 5 or 6, thundery showers, fog patches for a time, moderate, occasionally very poor for a time. 40s, Cromarty, 4th, Tyne, Dogger, south or southwest, 5 or 6, increasing 7 at times. Thundery shower.